Hey, this is Jeremy Cummings. I'm the host here at Cummings' Culture, and I want to share something really special with you today. I want to share with you Ashley Maven and her incredible program, Joy Rising. Now, I know what you're thinking. Another program, another coach. But let me stop you right there. Ashley just isn't another coach. She's an emotional freedom and success coach who's changing lives. Ashley's Joy Rising program isn't about giving you empty promises and quick fixes. It's about giving you every opportunity to have real transformation in your life. And trust me, I've seen it firsthand. This isn't some cookie cutter program where you're just another number to get somebody paid. No, this is about you and your journey and your success and your joy, because Ashley Maven is dedicated to helping real people like you achieve real results. And let me tell you, I'm just not the host of Cummings' Culture. No, I'm a joy riser. Thanks to Ashley's guidance and support, I've experienced all of these things. So if you're ready to experience true emotional freedom and unlock the joy within you, and you want to check this out, then go to www.ashleymaven.com today. Don't let another day go by feeling stuck or unfulfilled. Join the Joy Rising movement and discover the life you were meant to live. Need something to listen to that's family friendly? Well, I've got the show for you. It's the Old Man's Podcast, live every morning, rain, shine, and this old man is not the one that's snoring, because he's up bright and early to entertain you. 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 a.m. Central, 10 o'clock Eastern, the Old Man's Podcast, streaming live exclusively over on Podbean.
Live show that says you'll hear about Jesus, you'll hear about politics, you'll hear about sports, and you'll even hear about farts. Now, this is my kind of show. You're now tuned in to the bearded fat man who's bringing sexy back. Live from Alabama, you're listening to Cummings is Culture. Now, here he is in all of his glory, the best-looking fat man alive, Jeremy Cummings.
What's up, everybody? This is another episode of Cummings' Culture, but this is a little bit of a throwback episode. That's right. You heard this is a throwback episode. A lot of people have wondered, you know, Cummings' Culture was around 4 years ago, and we had a lot of guests on this show that were great, great guests. And when Cummings' Culture went away, I let some of the stuff just go away. And anyway, I found the archives of Cummings is Culture. And it's hard to believe that I actually found the archives, but I did. So today on this episode, you're going to hear the one and the only, the woman herself, Juanita Broderick, live on Cummings is Culture. And, you know, we just can't wait to let you hear this. So I'm going to shut up, and that's my timer for me to shut up. And we're going to get into this episode. So enjoy Juanita Broderick on Cummings is Culture. Before we start, I just want to say that I told Gene something last week when I had him on, and it was on interview. And I don't know if you went back and listened to it. I don't know who listens and who doesn't, but when I had Gene on, I told him, I said, I got a slogan that Juanita should just put her face on a shirt and say, me too, but not you, because that's what I feel the media does to you.
The original Me Too. Somebody did one of those way back when they had the when Me Too was so popular, and it had mine and Kathleen Willey's and Paula Jones's pictures on the front of it, and it said the original Me Too.
You're the original Me Too. Now, a lot of people wondering, what are we going to talk about today? I'm just going to tell you, I don't know how long this is going to go. We're just going to go with the flow. We'll go as long as Miss Juanita wants to talk. Now the book, you better put some ice on that. Now, I know what that quote means, and a lot of people that don't know what that quote means. Now, we're not going to go into details about what happened. If they want those details, you can buy the book. You can go to www.juanitabroderick.com to get the book. And I believe you can also get a autographed copy there. Is that correct?
Yeah, you can get an autographed copy or order the plain one.
Okay. I think I would just rather have the autographed copy.
You were talking about co-author. All of the book is the only thing that Nick Lully wrote was the foreword.
Okay.
Everything else I wrote. It was just sort of me trying, after I came back from the inauguration of President Trump, I wanted to sit down and just sort of put all of my life into words. And that's what I did. You know, I sat down for several months and I was going to give this to my son. I had no idea it'd become a book. Yeah. But anyway, the title comes from the actual assault that happened to me on April the 25th, 1978. I had been working in Attorney General Bill Clinton's campaign for governor. And I first met him, I had worked about a month putting up yard signs and handing out information. And his campaign office called my business and said, Mr. Clinton's going to be in the area, and can he come by and visit your nursing home? And we were so excited. And that's the only time that I ever actually met him. I had a situation with him years later, but that's the only time I actually met him. And while he was there, the picture you see on the front of my book is when he came to the nursing home with him and I and a couple of residents. One of them was cut out. After that picture was taken, he comes over to me and starts talking. And I began to tell him about the problems we were having in nursing homes, that if he became governor, we really needed to talk to him about nursing home situation and the low per diem rate. We weren't getting enough money from Medicaid to satisfactorily take care of our residents. And he sort of stopped me, Jeremy, in mid-sentence. And he said, are you ever in Little Rock? And I said, yes, I do. I go down there for seminars and meetings. And I said, in fact, I'll be there in about 3 weeks. And he said, well, when you get there, call my office and let's get together and talk about this. So that's how I ended up going to Little Rock and being with Bill Clinton.
Now, let me ask, now for the people that are saying that, you know, oh, I've heard this before, but here's something that you probably don't know. If you go back to that Lisa Myers interview of 1998?
Yeah, well, 1999 is when they aired it.
Okay, well, 1999, if you go back to that Lisa Myers interview, NBC actually broke down and got the facts. They did their work, even though they aired it too late, which they should have aired it sooner. They actually broke down where they did verify that Juanita was in town in Little Rock in April the 25th, right?
Yeah, 1978. I'd gone down on the 24th.
And they actually broke that down. You were in that hotel. They seen that. They seen where that nursing home convention was happening that day. So that is completely verified, backed up by facts, according to NBC.
Right. And they had all of these facts. They just did not want to air the interview during the impeachment. That was I had heard that Andy Lack had said they weren't going to be the ones responsible for removing Bill Clinton from office. And of course, he and Andy Lack were friends. They played golf together. You know, it was a complete conspiracy. And I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but yes, it was held until after the impeachment.
Now, in that interview, now a couple of years ago, this came out, and I can't remember if it was Lou Dobbs or who the reporter was over at Fox, but I seen the interview where he had someone on from Yahoo News and said that NBC withheld portions of your interview and did not play the full interview.
Right, right. They edited it. We taped for approximately 6 or 7 hours, and I think the interview ended up being about 25 minutes, maybe 30 minutes, something like that. But the most interesting part is when Lisa Myers asked me, she says, "Have you ever been threatened by anyone around the Clintons?" And I started to explain the time that Hillary threatened me 3 weeks after the rape. And as soon as I started talking, the producer runs into my living room and says, "Oh, no, no, we can't go there. We cannot talk about Hillary." So that was one of the main things I wanted to be able to talk about. And they wouldn't let me at all. Hillary was completely off limits.
Why?
I have no idea. I mean, you're talking, it was 20 years later. Why was she off limits? I don't understand it. I got the same response when Andrea Mitchell, when I first came out on Twitter and made that tweet back in 2016 stating what had happened to me. And then Andrea Mitchell from NBC calls me and wants an interview about it. And then I tell her everything that happened. And then about 5 minutes later, she calls me back and said, "Well, that's old news. We're not going to use it." So it's they play games. They play games. They're still in the Clintons' pocket.
They had the Jeffrey Epstein story way back in 2006, I believe, also, didn't they?
Right, 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 they did. And they had, and it included Bill Clinton. And we'll probably, I mean, will we ever know, you know, what he did on that island? You know, it's, we all can sort of picture what he did, but will we ever be told?
Well, Ghislaine's still alive.
Yeah, for now. You know, she is. And who knows, you know, what, if anything's even going to come of that.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, because now one of the girls, now let me ask you about this, because you're close with, you became very close with the Trumps and the Trump campaign and President Trump himself. Now, one of the girls that came forward about Jeffrey Epstein, now she was recruited at Mar-a-Lago by Ghislaine Maxwell.
Yeah.
Now, I had seen a report. Now, the media doesn't report on this, but actually they said at some point Trump found out about Epstein and barred him from Mar-a-Lago.
Right, right. And that's true. You know, he did. And he would never allow him to come back again. But they don't like to tell you that. When you're out in the public and you were as well known as Jeffrey Epstein and Donald Trump were, they try to get these pictures where they look so familiar and they're so happy to be together. I can't see Donald Trump ever being happy being around Jeffrey Epstein, but I can see him tolerating him.
Yeah.
Until he barred him, you know, from Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Bill was on that plane, according to the flight records, 27 times.
Yeah.
And Trump was on one flight. I believe it was from Florida to New York one time. There are no more flight records that say that Trump went to Epstein Island. And it wasn't even the Lolita Express. I believe it was just a private plane that they had rented or something.
No, he was just catching a ride back to New York.
Yeah.
With him. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, those records and the media just, they for some reason, why does the media just keep covering for him?
It's so exasperating. It's God, when he and Kamala did their empowering women, you know, I tweeted then, I said, having Bill Clinton talk about empowering women is about like having Jeffrey Dahmer host a cooking class. You know, it's that ridiculous. It's everybody knew it was ridiculous, but they did it anyway because they can.
That's something that I don't get. Now, of course, now we're live and we have to, you know, use the allegations and the allegedly and all of these stuff, and which is fine because nothing's been proven in a court of law. But you as an individual, you also have a right to tell your story and to tell the truth about what you say happened, just like he has the right to deny it. But if your facts are out there and they're not putting out any facts now. Let's go back to that Leslie Meyer interview or that NBC interview. I hope I'm remembering her name right. But anyway,
Lisa Meyer.
Sorry. That NBC interview. Now, when they reached out to the White House declined to comment on literally everything about if he knew you, what he knew about you, everything, even though he appointed you to a position.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But that's in a position that I wasn't even aware of that came from him as governor. I was on the board of directors of the Arkansas Nursing Home Association, and I thought that they had appointed me to go to this board. It was a long-term care advisory board. He was never at the meetings, and I don't think I actually even knew that he was the one that had to appoint me. I knew they had nominated me as the person to go, but I didn't know that it's something he had to okay.
Now, he wrote you a letter. Now, you received a letter about your outstanding work at your nursing home, right?
Right. After I had gone to Little Rock and tried to talk to him, which I never got to talk to him about, you know, the nursing home and the per diem rate and Medicaid and all of that. I was struggling, I mean, terribly, you know, all nursing homes were, but yet my nursing home was awarded the best nursing home in Arkansas several years in a row. There were five top nursing homes. And I get this letter from the office of the governor and congratulating me, and it's all a form, I still have the letter, congratulating me on the care that we gave and the award, and then scrawled across the bottom of it in his handwriting. I mean, he wrote it. We know he wrote it. It says, "I admire you very much, Bill." That was 5 years after the rape, you know. And I just looked at that, and my immediate thought is, do you admire me because I've kept quiet? You know, that was something. People say, well, you know, why didn't you come forward? Why didn't you tell the police? Listen, Jeremy, he was the police. He was the attorney general of my state. And I would never have gone up against him. He also, as the attorney general, regulated nursing homes. He could have shut me down at a moment's notice. But still, the most important thing, and the main reason I didn't come forward, is that I blame myself. I thought, how can you be so damn stupid? How could you not have known? And it was shame and it was guilt. And I didn't want to talk about it, even though there were five people, you know, that I told what happened. One being the lady that found me that was traveling with me 30 minutes afterwards. But it's something I'll never forget after it happened. And for your viewers, how did I end up in a hotel room with Bill Clinton? I'll tell you how. When Norma Rogers and I got to Little Rock, we checked into the hotel. The next morning when we got up, we shared the same room. We called his office. And the young lady said, well, he's not here. Let me give you his apartment number. So I called that number. He answers and he says, I said, hi, this is Mrs. Hickey. That was my name at the time. Yeah. I said, Norma and I are here, my director of nursing, and we'd like to run over to your office at noon and bring all these forms and things that I brought you to show you. You know, I had graphs, I had worked on it, had everything showing what it costs to take care of one patient versus what we received from Medicaid. And he said, oh, I'm not going to be there today. And my heart just sunk. And I thought, well, I can just take this over to his office and leave it, and maybe he'll look at it. And then he immediately said, why don't I just come to your hotel now? And it sort of caught me off guard. And I thought, God, that's great. I won't have to drive clear across town to meet with him on our lunch break. And he said, I'll just meet you down in the, I told him where we were staying at the Camelot. And he said, I'll just meet you down at the Camelot coffee shop. And he said, I'll call your room when I get there. So I turned to Norma and I said, you go on to the meeting, sign us in, and I'll be down as soon as I leave the coffee shop. I'll be on into the meeting. Well, in about 20 minutes or so, I get a phone call and it's Bill Clinton. And he said, Juanita, it's just so crowded down here and there's reporters around. He said, I don't think we'd be able to talk. And he said, and it's, there's so many people. He said, do you mind if we have coffee and talk about this in your room? And listen, I don't care if it's been 40 some odd years. I can still remember thinking, oh, I shouldn't do that. And then you think, God, I want to give him these papers. And he's the attorney general. Surely I can let him come to my room for a few minutes. So I told him, okay. And I'd ordered coffee up to the room. Well, that's not what he came to my room for. But I still had no idea. When he came up to my room and I opened the door, when he knocked, he had on these dark sunglasses. And I thought, my God, what's he standing out in that hall in sunglasses for? But I tried to not be so nervous and I let him on in the room. That was my huge mistake. My first mistake was when he called my room and said, can we meet in your room? I should have said, hell no, we're not meeting in my room. I'll make a trip back down here and come to your office at a later date. But I'd never been alone in a hotel room with a man that I didn't know. And I was just so anxious to share this information with him. And I thought he would be, a principled man. I thought he would. It's like when those people, those ladies came out about Eric Schneiderman, mm-hmm. the Attorney General of New York. And I remember reading one of them's quote, one of the main ones that came forward to tell about the sexual abuse. And she said, what do you do when your abuser is the highest law enforcement officer in your state? And of course, they were in the Me Too era then, and he resigned because he had too much evidence against him.
Now, I have a listener question. This was submitted from Mike. Mike's from Tampa Bay, Florida.
Yeah.
Mike says, did you ever go to a support group, or did a support group ever reach out to you? What was that time like for support groups? Is it better now, or is it just the same? Is it just that women are just the same, not talking about it?
Yeah. Mike, you're talking about the 70s. Talking about the 1970s, when I can remember my grandmother saying, oh, men will be men. You just have to deal with it, Juanita. We were in a different era. My therapy was my work. I mean, for about 2 to 3 months after the rape, I could hardly put one foot in front of the other. I was like a wounded dog when I walked around. So I ended up, there was about 5 people that I told. Of course, the lady that came to my room hunting for me because I hadn't showed up at the meeting. But I just, when I would start to have panic attacks and when I couldn't sleep at night, I would go to my office and work. I would walk around, see how the patients were doing. And my therapy was taking care of others less fortunate. I know that may seem like, well, how could you do that? But being a nurse, that just came natural to me. I just put off all my own feelings and tried to make this nursing home a go. And so that's what I did. No, I had friends that I could talk to about what had happened to me, but that was all, no group counseling.
Now, let me go back. Let me get off the rate, because now this is what I'm going to say about this. This is as far as I'm going to go. I'll explain this. You don't have to, unless there's something you want to say. But the people that are wondering, you better put some ice on that. This is what this means. Apparently, Juanita alleges, not just in her book, but in her past testimonies to NBC, to other interviews, that Bill Clinton physically bit her upper lip during the assault, and that her upper lip was extremely swollen. And of course, Bill Clinton disputed that and said it didn't happen. But the woman who found her, Norma, that she spoke of, says that she saw it. She told NBC that she saw it. The other people said they saw it. Her husband at the time of that interview when it aired, Mr. Broderick himself, said that he remembers seeing the injury.
Yeah.
There were several people that said that they remember either seeing about it or hearing about it. And she, of course, alleges it in her book. But the reason that, you know, some people are wondering, well, why is Bill not in jail or something like that? Here's the problem with that. And Arkansas is not like Alabama, or it's not like a lot of other states where in some cases, rape has no statute of limitations. In Arkansas, the statute of limitations was 6 years. This happened in 1978, so it would have been, what, 1984, somewhere along in there?
Right. And they say he bit her lip. Every time I would scream, he would reach in to kiss me, and he would grab my lip between his teeth and bite on my lip to keep me quiet. And it was the most frightening thing, because I thought he was going to bite my lip off. You know, it was... I couldn't believe what was happening to me. And then when it was all over, my goodness, and he gets up, straightens himself, and starts to leave. And I'm sitting up on the side of the bed in a daze, thinking, what on earth just happened? I'm hurting all over. My clothes are torn, and my lip is swollen about 2 to 3 times the size. And it's bleeding down the corners of my mouth. And when he starts to leave the room, I'm still crying. And he just sort of puts on his sunglasses and his suit coat, and he motions to my mouth, and he says, "You better put some ice on that," and goes out the door. And I thought, my God, it must look bad. Then I got up and took a look at it.
That's terrible.
Yeah, terrible.
It's terrible. So yeah, if you were wondering what that means, that's what that means. And, you know, of course, if Clinton wants to come on here now let me put this out. I'm not under regulation the way other people are under regulation. I don't fall under FCC guidelines. I don't have to do this. But if Bill Clinton wants to come on here and talk to me, he can come on here and talk to me anytime he wants to. Well, and I'll ask him.
He's never mentioned my name. He himself has never said anything about this, but it was denied through his attorneys. He's never, to this day, ever said, "I did not do what Juanita Broderick said I did. I did not do that." It has never come out of his mouth. And Hillary is forever saying, "Well, this has been adjudicated and litigated." It has never gone to court. That's just the way she gets around answering any questions about it. There was one reporter after the impeachment that asked him, I can't think of who his name is, came up to him and asked him, and his comment was, "I've got to get on with running the country. I can't get into that."
Well, now, and right before President Trump was, when President Trump was running for president in 2016. Now, you know, Bill was at an event and MSNBC, I don't know if you've seen this or not, but, and I believe, I don't know if it was an MSNBC reporter or what reporter they were from, but it was a reporter that walked up and asked Bill point blank about Juanita Broderick. The second time they aired that interview, they cut that question out.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't want to show that. But, you know, there's been some good reports about it. In 2017, Michelle Goldberg with the New York Times came out with her big article, I Believe Juanita. And I could have fallen out of my chair when I saw that. Oh, yeah. I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. The New York Times. And then the others that came out was, anyway, there were just others. She sort of got the tide going, and so many others came out also after that and said, yes, they did believe me. That Bill Clinton, even Jake Tapper, said we need to have a reckoning about Bill Clinton's past.
Yeah. I think that, you know, like all these women that came out about Trump, the media was immediately all over them, and oh, we believe them. And
yeah.
And a lot of them, I don't know how many, but a lot of them found out, you know, a lot of it turned out that Trump wasn't even in the same place at the same time they were accusing him. And then, of course, the media never retracted their stories.
Right.
But NBC came out on your story in 1990. Well, it was filmed in 98, right?
Well, so it was early 99. Okay. Yeah.
In 1999, they filmed you, and what they did, they went to see if Bill was in town, if he was even in town. And the way that they knocked it down was they sort of came to the conclusion they couldn't get any answers about his schedule or anything from his law team or anything. But from the way they knocked it down due to their reporting and their investigative reporting, they come to the conclusion that he was probably in town in Little Rock on that date and that time.
Yes, yes. Yes. Yes, he was. I can say for sure he was.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You know, this is the thing. I have to be, you know, allegedly. And it's just like, I can't get down on something like this on my personal belief. We'll discuss this off camera, but, you know, yeah. It's just like, it gets so frustrating to the point of,
yeah,
you know, I have to say allegedly, I just can't come out and I have to say, well, you know, well, I can't. I believe Juanita Broderick, ladies and gentlemen. I believe her. I believe, you know, this is her truth and her story, but her accusations allegedly happened. They can't be proven in a court of law, but do I believe it? I do.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's true.
I mean,
you know, it's true. And so many people say, well, why did you wait so long to come out?
Yeah.
Listen. I had worked through this in a way that was satisfactory to me. And people say, oh, you're just so brave for coming out. No, I wasn't. I would never have come out. I was exposed as Jane Doe number 5 in the Paula Jones suit. And I would never have come out on my own. My life was happy. I'd tried to put it behind me. And I would never have come out. Then when the Paula Jones lawyers deposed me for her case against Bill Clinton, I was angry because I had told them I did not want to go through talking about what had happened to me. There were two investigators that came to my front porch one day, and you'll never guess who they were. Their name was Rick and Beverly. I can't think of their last name now. But anyway, they were the parents of Miranda Lambert. Huh. When Miranda was a little bitty girl, Lambert, there, it was Rick and Beverly Lambert. And when Miranda was a little girl, they had an investigative firm. And these two, before I came out, these two came to my door one day and introduced themselves. Of course, they weren't known then. And I walked out on the front porch and talked to them. And they said, we're here for Paula Jones, and we'd like to talk to you about Bill Clinton. And I said, nope, you're not talking to me about Bill Clinton. And I made the mistake of saying, you know, that's a very horrible situation for me to try to remember. In fact, the transcript of this is on the internet. And I just told him, I said, I can't dredge that back up. And I just can't go there. And you please tell those attorneys, please do not rely on any gossip or stuff around here. You just please don't do that. And so I thought that I had pretty well satisfied them. And then in about 2 or 3 weeks, I got a letter that I was going to be deposed. And I was so angry that her attorneys were pulling me, kicking and screaming into a lawsuit that would just open me bare to the bone, that I would have to talk about something like that. So I went to the deposition and I told them nothing had happened. And then when I walked out of there, I felt so victorious. I thought, you're not going to drag me in this. And I turned and walked out of that deposition. And then about 3 weeks later, I get subpoenaed by Ken Starr. I found out that the Lamberts had recorded my conversation with them, and they sent that recording to Ken Starr's people. They were angry at me, and they sent that recording to him. So then now I'm going to be deposed by Ken Starr and his group. So here they come, and I think I'm not going to tell them the truth. I don't want drug into this. I see what's happening to Kathleen Willey, Paula Jones, Jennifer Flowers, all these people. And I thought, I'm not going to let them drag me down like that. Then here comes my son, the attorney, and says, Mom, you've got to tell the truth. I had told him when he was 18. And he said, Paula Jones's case was a civil case. He said, this is a federal case. And he said, it's very serious. You've got to finally tell the truth. So that's how the truth came out.
Yeah, it's now for those that don't know, Ken Starr was the special prosecutor that was looking into charges for Bill Clinton and his impeachment investigation for obstruction of justice. And that's how Juanita got dragged into the entire thing.
Yeah.
So now let me ask you, did you ever think at a time that he was going to be impeached? Did you think that was it for him?
Oh, I that's why I did the interview. I mean, here I had Lisa Myers. I'd been talking with her off and on for a year. And she's saying, you've got to tell. And I said, I just can't. I can't do it. Go on national worldwide news and tell what happened to me. I just thought I couldn't do it. Then after it hit Ken Starr's office, it was going to be public knowledge. So that's why I finally consented to go on TV and tell my story my way and not how the media likes to twist it. So we assumed that this was going to be aired. They rushed to my house when I finally said, okay, did the interview, did all of the research, checked everything out. And then it was supposed to air the following Friday in about 10 days. Never aired. And then I get a call from Lisa and I'm angry. I mean, I had put myself out there on the line because they had, and more or less, they couldn't assure me, but they said, we're going to get this on during the impeachment. And she calls me and she said, Juanita, I've got good news and I've got bad news. I said, okay. And she said, the good news is you're credible. And I waited and she said, the bad news is you're too credible. Now, what do you do with that? You know, I thought, they're going to hold this. They're going to do it. I was so angry, so angry. And then they finally ran it about 6 weeks, about 3 weeks after the impeachment, opposite the Grammys. They didn't want it seen. Isn't that terrible?
The opposite the Grammys. Well, you know, hey, you know what? You would have done fantastic ratings if it had been modern day because the Grammys.
No. Back then, though, it was popular.
Yeah, now it sucks. Now it's just a bunch of perverts up there on the stage.
Yes, it does.
Now, let's brighten things up a little bit here. Now, in 2008, I'm going to shock a few people because if you go to your Twitter, let me ask you about your Twitter. Now, your Twitter, at a tens nut, right? Is that is it?
No, it's a tennis nut. I still nut. Play tennis. Yeah. I need to tell people that. A ten s nut.
I wondered what that was. I was like, what in the world has she got her Twitter? I thought I was expecting at Juanita Broderick, at Broderick, at Juanita. I was like,
yeah. Oh, I love tennis. I watch tennis all the time. Love it. And still play.
I love college football. So I'm going to change my Twitter name to at C-O-L-G-S ball.
Yeah. So what were you going to say? 2008. What?
2008. Now, this is going to shock people because they go on Juanita Broderick's Twitter and they're like, well, she's a Trumpy. And then they go at like, now, in 2008, you voted for Barack Obama.
Yes. And gave probably around $3,500 to his campaign.
Now, sure. Yeah, that's
I thought it would be great, you know.
Well, I mean, just being honest, I mean, we didn't have too much of a choice in 2008. I mean, you had John McCain, you had Barack Obama.
Right, right.
I don't know. Did you see the news that came out today that Cindy McCain was going to be appointed to Joe Biden's cabinet?
Oh, I could see. No, I haven't seen it. I've hardly been on Twitter today.
She's going to be on, he's appointing her to her some position. Anyway, it's going to be based in Italy. It's something to do with the United Nations. She's going to be appointed to some cabinet position or I don't know. It's some weird. Yeah, that's what I went. I did. I went.
The whole cabinet's a bunch of idiots. They're just a bunch of horrible people.
Let me ask you now, Kamala. Let's ask about this. Now we're gonna get on Tara Reid. Forget the Twitter things we talked about Obama. But now we're gonna get on Tara Reid because I gotta ask you about this. Now Kamala said she believed Tara Reid. I got the recording. I can play the recording right now if we need to.
Yeah.
Now she says she believed Tara Reid. Does that mean that Kamala Harris also believes Juanita Broderick?
Oh Lord. They believe me, but they don't want you to know it.
So how could you work for somebody if you believe that they're guilty of what Tara Reid alleged that Joe Biden is guilty of? Could you work for somebody like that?
No, but we're not Democrats.
No, we're not. We're not Democrats. Thank God. I used to be.
Yeah.
I used to be. My family used to be Democrats, but that sort of ended with Clinton because of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when everything came out, when he destroyed the country, like that's what, like people look and they pointed Obama. But I remember right after NAFTA was signed, I remember sitting there. My grandpa used to smoke. And I remember sitting in the floor and I remember, what's his name on Fox News? Oh, God, I can't remember his name. Charles Krauthammer. I think
wasn't he great?
I think it was Charles Krauthammer. I'm pretty sure that I just remember him saying, it's going to be 20 years before we feel the effects of NAFTA. And he said, at least 10 to 20 years. Okay. So in 2008, the market starts to go. And then we go into the Great Recession. Obama got a lot of blame for that. But a lot of that was caused by Bill by doing NAFTA the way he did it.
Yeah, NAFTA was bad. And thank God that Trump, you know, did away with it. But now didn't Biden bring it back?
Biden's doing a lot of stuff. God, like this guy, good Lord. I mean, this guy's our president. Listen to this.
We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men and women created by the thing.
Right. You know, the thing, that guy is our president, ladies and gentlemen. He said the Second Amendment wasn't absolute. If the Second Amendment isn't absolute, that means there's, you got no freedom of speech. That means the First Amendment, which, you know, is freedom of speech. It's not absolute. There's no freedom of religion. There's nothing. It's not.
It's like we're in the Twilight Zone. Every day he'll do another executive decision. And you think, when is this going to stop? This man, and he's not doing it. His handlers are doing it. This is either coming from Susan Rice or Obama or somebody else. He's just reading what's written down for him to read. He He has no idea what he's doing.
Could you imagine if Donald Trump Jr. admitted to snorting Parmesan cheese?
Oh, I know. It's unreal. It's just, and there's Hunter out on the book tour.
Like the things that have been released from that laptop and all of these, like the Burisma scandal, and it's just amazing. Like, no wonder your story got buried.
Yeah.
Juanita, no wonder it got buried, because look at what they're burying now. We have a president of the United States whose son admitted to snorting Parmesan cheese, and the media said, oh, he's so brave.
Oh, I know. I know, Jeremy. It's so upsetting. You just keep hoping and thinking that by 2022 that we can get the House and the Senate back and at least be a thorn in his side.
Well, we can make him a lame duck in 2022 is exactly what we can do.
Yeah.
So let me ask you, now let's go back to your Twitter page. You're very vocal on Twitter, but I've never seen Juanita Broderick. Yeah. I've never seen you be taken down for anything. Have you ever been silenced over there?
Yeah. Yeah. 12 hours at a time. That I get time out.
They've never gotten me. Like, I tweet some stuff sometimes and it's like they never gotten me, but I'm waiting for it. Facebook got me. I'll email you a picture over what they got me for. I posted this in August of last year, and about 6 weeks ago Facebook got me.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, every now and then if I tweet anything that has statistics with it regarding the election or COVID, our vaccinations, I have to sit out for 12 hours. I'll get this little email through the mail and said, you are suspended until, 12 hours.
Let me ask you something. Now, we can say it here. Election fraud. It's beautiful. We can say it here. There's no censorship over here. Mm-hmm. Now, you were close with the Trumps in 2016. Now, I want to get to something after this, but now you can say this here. You're not going to be censored. This is not going to be taken down. People can come here to hear the real raw Juanita uncensored. What do you think happened? And don't say anything about any voting companies, because they will come after us. But what do you think happened? Do you think anything, do you believe that the 2020 election was on the up and ups? Because
no, absolutely not. And when they say that he won 81 million Biden, oh my God, there are so many people that with statistical backgrounds that say they doubt he got 60, that this was going to be a windfall for Donald Trump. And they knew it. They knew it. And they took precautions. I mean, whatever happened to Ruby Freeman and her grabbing those big trays out from under the table after they made all of the poll watchers leave? It's all over. It's fraudulent. And what I don't understand is why the Supreme Court held off and didn't do anything. That's the biggest disappointment. And right now, I'd like to know what they think about getting extra members on their Supreme Court.
I'm going to tell you why. I believe this so staunchly in the beginning. I believe that the reason the Supreme Court did not want to hear the case of election fraud was because anytime you have a case, it's a 50-50 shot, whether you're going to win, you're going to lose. Okay, yeah. Trump comes out on top, you're not going to have to worry about court packing. But if Biden comes out on top, you're going to have to worry about it. So I think the Supreme Court was like, okay, let's just sit back. Let's not take the case, because if he wins, he's going to pack the court. Now he's packing the court. Now he's going to pack the court regardless.
Yeah, that's frightening. That's absolutely frightening, Jeremy. But I'm so disappointed in Kavanaugh, and I'm so disappointed in the woman that was, I can't think of her, Amy
Coney Barrett.
Yeah. I'm so disappointed that they weren't more vocal. But I also want to say another thing. I'm wondering, oh God, I hope we don't get put off the air for this. I'm wondering if Judge Roberts is being blackmailed.
I've heard that. And you know what? I played that on the show before the allegations that Lynn Wood posted over on Telegram, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about that before. I've reached out to Lynn. Lynn's never called me, you know, back. I was going to have Lynn on the show. I was trying to, but yeah. I never got a call back from him, but cause I was interested.
Gene and I'll be with him in Dallas. We'll both be speaking down there in Dallas Memorial Day weekend. And maybe we can say, go on the Cummings Show.
Forgotten Country is that event, right?
Yeah. Going to be super. They're trying to say it's a QAnon event. They are in Newsweek and everybody else. They're building this up and they're trying to get the city to not let us come in, but it's going great. We're going to have a huge crowd.
Oh yeah. Cause I was talking to Gene last week and we were talking about QAnon and I asked him because they keep Michael Flynn. I don't know if you've seen the interview with Michael Flynn or not, General Flynn, for anybody who doesn't know, we talked about this last week, but I don't know if you got to see it, but they ambush, they use this thing when it comes to conservatives of ambush reporting. They see like when you're in a coffee shop and or you're making coffee or you're, you know, at McDonald's getting a hamburger real quick. They want to ambush report on you. They want to get an ambush, you know, kind of style of reporting, which is not real reporting.
Yeah.
So this little geek reporter runs up to Michael Flynn and goes, what do you think about QAnon? And just shoves a microphone in his face. And Michael Flynn just looks at him with the most serious face and goes, what's that?
I love it. I didn't see that.
Epic.
Oh, isn't that perfect? It's like when Ted Cruz told the guy when he didn't have the mask on.
Yeah.
And the reporter said, well, you should be wearing a mask. He says, well, you just back up.
Oh, yeah, because he had already been vaccinated. Now, have you been back? We'll ask this. Are you going to take the vaccine if you don't have to answer the question?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I'm a registered nurse and I know too much about it. I am not going to take the vaccine. And I had COVID January and February. Well, it was the very end of January. I just had a slight cold. And my physician said, well, you better go get tested. Sure enough, I had it, but it wasn't bad at all. I'm one of those lucky people that it didn't really affect me that much.
Now, when I had Gene on last week, Gene spoke he spoke of his love for you and how he appreciates you and how his children, you are like the adopted grandmother to his children. How did you meet Gene?
On the book tour, whenever I was going to speak, mostly at Latinos for Trump. You know, leading up to the election, almost every Latinos for Trump event that I went and spoke at, Gene would be there too. And I just love him. He and Nadine and Cruz and Luna, they're just precious. Yes, I've adopted them.
But he did. He spoke of his love for you. And he said, when I seen that you were having Juanita on, he was like, I was thinking, oh my God, how weird is this? Because he was coming on and then you were coming on not too long after that. But, you know, that's the thing. Like he said that most of the conservative speakers are good down home people. Now, like you were talking about, you were in the nursing home business and you own nursing homes and you're a registered nurse and you used what, here we go. You allege what happened to you, you know, I'll never forget what you said in 1999 in that interview. They said, is this about money? And you said, no, I'm not writing a book. I'm not doing that. And like you said here, you didn't know you were writing a book. You just thought that this was going to be for your son.
Yeah. No, I didn't. In fact, I spent about 3 months and I thought I need to give him all these dates and things about my life I never told him. And I just put it back and forgot it. And then one day Nick Lully calls and he said, I'd like to do, he was a reporter in Jacksonville. And he said, I'd like to do a serialized interview with you. And I thought, he says, I'd like to ask you about your life. And I said, good, I've got an outline. So I sent that over to him as a you know, a guide for doing this serialized interview. We were going to do a podcast every week for a certain number of weeks. Yeah. And about the next day or two, he calls me back and he says, oh no, we need to do a book. And he didn't change any of the book. It's just sort of my life, you know, from the time I was a little girl being abused by my mom, physically and verbally, and how I got through all that. And then I opened my own nursing home and struggle. And then here comes Bill Clinton and how I got through that. It's just an interesting story. And so many people did contact me and say, we'd like to write a book. We'd like for you to write a book. We'd like to help you. But we only want from about you and the Clintons. And I thought, nope, I'm more than that. I'm going to do my own book in my own way. Yeah. My life has been a great ride, you know, about a very young nurse and entrepreneur that did okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing like, you know, you took your circumstances and you know, we're all dealt with some cards, people. And a lot of times you ain't dealt with a royal flush. I mean, it's just, you know, you just gonna have to use what you was gave.
I wasn't going to let that 30 minutes, even though that's now what people usually want to hear about, that's not what I'm all about. I didn't want to let that 30 minutes in my life ruin my life.
Yeah. And it's great that you're not, you know, because so many people, like, if it would have happened to so many, like somebody else, they would have been like, okay, you know, at some point they would have said, oh, let's make a movie and let's do this and do that. Let's let this define me. And it's just like, you're not letting it define you or who you are.
And I very rarely talk about that. My goal right now is to help really good conservative candidates that we need to get into office. And that's really what I like to talk about. I do talk about what I went through, how hard it was to get through it, and how the things that I did to help me get through it.
Yeah, that's why when before we started this, you said, I don't want to go into detail about it. And that's when I was like, thank God, because you know what? I get this, like, I know you heard that intro I did. Like, I get this thing of like where I scream and I yell about stuff sometimes and people get engaged and they listen. And it's like, nobody wants to see Cummins cry. So that's why I was like, thank God we're not going into detail.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, now you've lived besides the downs and the bad things that have happened to you, you've lived a pretty wonderful life. I mean, if you really think about it,
yeah.
Girl out of Arkansas, like me sitting here, me and you sitting here talking, like this wasn't supposed to happen. I was supposed to be when people go to my website, they look at my bio and they're like, dude should have been a statistic. And it's like, you could have been a statistic too, you know?
Yeah. You know, I think back about after that all happened and everything, and how after Bill Clinton left my room, how frightened I was. And I rushed over and locked the door. And I remember thinking somebody was going to come in to get rid of the body. You know, that's the first thing that went through my mind. How could he do that and be running for governor? You know, it was, so I'm lucky I'm not a body.
Well, I heard that a lot of people believe that there is a body count out there and it's not, it's not low. I mean, I don't know. That's alleged, by the way. That's alleged. But anyway, now I only got like two or three more questions, and these are important because I want people to know the truth about this.
Okay.
When you met with Donald Trump in 2016 and he took you to that debate.
Yeah.
I've seen some people on the left allege that Donald Trump paid you and Paula Jones. And I think it was the other one. Was that Jennifer Flowers?
No. Yeah. No, no. It was Kathy Shelton.
Kathy Shelton.
The young girl that was raped by those.
And
Hillary defended him.
Yeah,
she was the other one. No, we weren't, but we were brought there by the campaign.
Yeah,
you know, our flights were paid for, our hotel was paid for, but no, we received absolutely no money.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to clear up, because anytime they say that, they say, oh, well, I bet Trump paid them, so they can hear it from your lips.
No, absolutely not. In fact, I was coming home. I was on the plane when Steve Bannon's people called me to ask me to be at the debate the next night. And I said, I'm on my way home. I was in Washington doing a very in-depth interview with Aaron Klein and Breitbart News. So was Kathleen Willey and Paula Jones. We were all there doing an interview together and then separate. And I think they aired a lot of that on Facebook before the debate. But anyway, I said, I'm on my way to Arkansas. And they said, well, we'd like to have you there. So my gosh, I finally said, yes, I would. And got up the next morning at 5 and was in St. Louis by probably 10 o'clock. And they hid us all day long. We were, because everywhere was reporters for this second debate. So they hid us in our hotel rooms, all day long. And then we finally, they told us that we were going over at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock, whatever it was, to meet President Trump at his hotel. And we were excited about that, and they had these, we went up to the top floor of his hotel room. They took us in the service elevator so we wouldn't be seen, and had people standing all around to make sure no reporters were around, because this is going to be a surprise. And they took us up to the top floor, and that's where we met him. And we thought it was time to go, you know, to the debate. And I see Steve Bannon motioning to us to come through the doors that we had, not the doors we'd come in through, but through other doors. And he opened those doors and we saw this long table. We never knew that we were going to be asked any questions. And I remember Steve said, go find your seats and leave the one in the center for Mr. Trump. And I said to Kathleen, I said, are we going to eat? I thought maybe serve us some food or something before we left. Nice tablecloth and everything. And then in a few minutes, Mr. Trump comes in and sits down in the middle seat. And he says to Steve Bannon, he said, let them in. And I turned to Kathleen and I said, let who in? And then all of a sudden, these double doors open, and here comes all these cameras and reporters, and they're as shocked as we are. We all look like a deer in the headlight, you know? We didn't know what they were doing there, and they were shocked to see us. So they come in, and they line up across the room, and Mr. Trump says, these nice ladies have something they'd like to say to you. And I thought, what? What? I mean, I don't know. I guess it was by design that we didn't know. And because he knew, and Steve Bannon knew, that we were for him. We wouldn't have been there and come on to the debate if we wasn't for him. But I really had to scramble. I was so glad that Paula Jones had to start it down on the other end, so I had time to think before it got to me. And then when it was over, we were just thought, what in the heck just happened? We had no idea. Then we went on to the debate. And when we walked in, we walked past the bleachers in a line, you know, past the bleachers where Clinton and Chelsea were sitting.
Yeah.
And that's where you see that picture of him with his eyes all bugged out. That's as we walked in the debate. Because it was a shock. Nobody knew that we were there until we walked in that debate.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, there's a joke down here. I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but it's a joke that was pretty common down here when I was a kid. They said the reason that Bill and Hillary takes Chelsea everywhere is because they didn't want to kiss her goodbye.
God. Well, there's that one mime that Chelsea and Bill Clinton sitting together, and he says something very derogatory about some woman who is that? And Chelsea says, "Oh, Dad, that's Mom."
Oh my God. But no, hey, you know, it's like, this is my last question.
Yeah.
When you met Donald Trump, like when you met him and then you continued to know him, because I know you've met him since then and you've probably had conversations with him. What does the media get wrong about the guy?
The guy is so sincere. He is so empathetic to anything, to anybody that he's talking to. He's so soft-spoken in public. You know, I mean, when you're with him, you know how he yells and all of this and does all this stuff at rallies. That's not the real Donald Trump. You know, he's so soft-spoken and he's so caring. I can't say enough good things about him, and the disappointment when the election was taken from him.
Yeah, me too. I remember there, I posted it the day he left Washington, and I was like, man, this is not going to be good.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I tweeted the other day, I said, the greatest thing that Joe Biden has done is prove how great a president Donald Trump was.
The best thing Joe Biden has done. Yeah. Yeah, that is. You're right. You're 100% right. Miss Juanita, thank you.
You're so welcome, Jeremy. I'm so glad I could be with you.
Hey, I've enjoyed this. This has been probably the best hour of Cummings' Culture anybody's ever going to get to listen to.
Thank you.
But everybody, of course, you can go to www.juanitabroderick.com and buy the book. The book is titled, You Better Put Some Ice on That, How I Survived Being Raped by Bill Clinton. That is by Juanita Broderick. There she is. She's got the copy. You'll have to say something so the camera will pick it up.
Got it?
It probably has it now.
Thanks.
There you go. Everybody, I hope you enjoyed this episode. Now, like as we said before, these are allegations. So Bill Clinton, if you want to come on Cummings' Culture, come on, buddy. Oh. So, hey, if you didn't like what you heard here today, I'm sorry, Snowflake, get over it, because it's not controversial. It's just culture.